The Comic Source presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. Welcome to another episode of The Comic Source presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. I'm your host Jace, here along with my co-host Manny. Just a reminder, The Chronology Project is where Manny and I are going to read each issue of the Top Cow universe in order and discuss it, analyze it, give you our thoughts on what we think of each issue. So if you want to follow along, you can do one of two things. You can go to our website, which is thecomicsourceblog.com. Go to the Top Cow Chronology page, and off to the right, you'll see a link that will take you to the Comic Vine page that has Condor's chronology. Condor is a user from the comicvine.com website who put together this awesome chronology, this reading order of the Top Cow Artifact universe. So if you want to check it out, you can go there and look, see what issues, what comics you need to buy if you want to follow along with us. And again, I want to give a lot of credit to Condor. He spent a lot of time putting that together, and we certainly appreciate it. While you're at our site, you can check out our other projects we have going on. Manny has his blog there. There's also a link to my YouTube channel where you can go and see reviews and our convention coverage. Every Wednesday, I do a quick hits where I talk about five or six books that have just come out that day. Kind of gives you an idea what to look out for before you go to the comic shop. Also, real quick, I want to mention that we're up on iTunes now. For those of you who are Apple product users, you can look for us there. Just do a search for the Top Cow Chronology Project. Also, if you found this podcast through my YouTube channel and you're not aware, there is another podcast that's the official podcast of Top Cow, and that's called Donuts and Top Cow, and you can also find that on iTunes. Finally, I'd like to mention that on the weekend of February 28th, March 1st, is the Long Beach Comic Expo in Long Beach, California. Manny and I will both be attending. Top Cow is also going to have a booth there, so I expect to talk to Matt Hawkins, the president of Top Cow, and I'll be there hanging around the Top Cow booth. Love to meet any of you listeners out there who want to come by and learn a little bit more about Top Cow if you don't know about them already. Give me your thoughts on the show. Love to meet you. That'd be really cool. So Manny and I should both be wearing our Top Cow Chronology t-shirts, our Comic Source hats. So come by. We'd love to meet you. All right. In this episode, we're going to cover the second issue of Witchblade. And I'm going to go over the creator credits real quick, and then I'll give a brief synopsis, and then we'll talk about what we thought about the issue. All right, before I go over the creator credits real fast, give me your quick impressions of issue 2, Manny.
It was a little bit slower, but expected. I guess it's kind of dealing with the whole shock of what happened in issue 1, and trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And we learned a little bit more about Iron's henchmen, which was really cool. And again, great artwork. And yeah, it definitely stepped it up from the first issue.
Okay, well, for me, issue 2 was a lot better than issue 1. I don't know if it's because, as you said, there was a little bit less action, so the pacing didn't have to be quite so fast. Also, being that there was a little bit less character interaction, it didn't have a lot of the cheesy dialogue. There were a couple scenes that really stood out for me that were just awesome, and the story got much more compelling. A few questions answered, but lots more questions raised, and when I finished 2, I immediately wanted 3. So let me run down the creators real fast. Writers, Brian Haberlin, Michael Turner, and David Wall. The pencils were by Michael Turner. Inks by D-Tron, John DeRitto, and Jose Guillen, with a little help from Larry Welch, and Nathan Cabrera and Jonathan Smith on colors. So just to give a brief rundown, one thing we failed to mention in the last issue, issue 1, was there was a little one-page scene right in the middle of the book where Sarah and her partner Michael Yee had gone to a crime scene, and there was a woman that was posed on her knees kind of looking up to the sky.
Oh, yes.
Said her body was burned from the inside out. She didn't look from the outside like she was burned at all, but apparently she insides of her were burned, kind of like she'd been microwaved. And apparently it was the third such body found that way. So this issue starts out, we're in the Honeypot nightclub in New York City. There's a long line for the restroom of ladies waiting to get in,
And then we see that kneeling in front of the toilet is another scantily clad woman in that same pose on her knees looking up to the sky, and the text something to the effect that the newspapers are going to lead with the headline, "Microwave Murderer Bakes Beauty Number 3. The next page, we see Sarah in that theater wearing the Witchblade. She's seems to be in a state of shock. She's looking down at the dead body of her partner, Michael Yee. In the background, we see all the thugs and criminals that she basically blasted with the Witchblade, and she's trying to understand what's happening to her. She removes the Witchblade, and we see that the Witchblade, when she's wearing it, kind of gives her armor in certain places, kind of shoulder pads and knee pads. As she removes the Witchblade, we see that armor sort of disappear, and then Sarah passes out. Next, we see she's in the hospital, surrounded by other members of the police force from her precinct. The doctor's talking about how she must have a very strong constitution to have recovered so fast. One of the cops has the Witchblade in a evidence bag, so I guess they came directly from the crime scene to see Sarah at the hospital. He mentions that they found this glove on her chest at the theater, and Sarah seems to be feeling kind of weak, and so they leave her to rest. It's also remarked that she's got a big bouquet of flowers next to her bed. They're wondering who sent them. We see that Nottingham, who is Kenneth Irons' number one henchman, is kind of eavesdropping on the conversation, keeping an eye on Sarah. The next scene, we see that Sarah is feeling terrible about the loss of her partner, that she was unable to save him. And then she has a very vivid dream where she sees herself wielding the Witchblade. She wakes up, learns that she's been out asleep for 18 hours, finds out that the big flower arrangement next to her bed was sent by Kenneth Irons. She decides at that point that she just needs to get out of the hospital, and she takes out her IV and leaves. Following page, we see that Kenneth Irons is meeting with somebody. We don't know who it is, but he seems to be in a very good mood. He deems last night a success. He finally knows who the rightful wielder of the Witchblade is. Meanwhile, the restaurant he's in, a member of the Triads comes in and attempts to assassinate Kenneth Irons because of the Triads that were killed the previous night. Unfortunately, the Triads' retribution is foiled when Nottingham reaches out and catches the bullet right before it's about to strike Kenneth Irons' face, which was a very cool scene. Irons tells Nottingham that he may retaliate now. Nottingham heads out. We learn that he's a very loyal servant of Kenneth Irons. It says no human assassin can touch him. And then there's just an awesome scene where Nottingham leaps over a car that's speeding toward him, slices through the car with his sword as he's leaping over, cuts both the car and the driver in half. Just an amazing scene, beautifully rendered by Michael Turner. Really an impactful thing to see, for sure. The story continues. Sarah's home. We see that she meets up with a young teenage girl, attempts to comfort her. I think this may be the daughter of the woman that was killed that we mentioned in issue one.
Yeah, Maria's daughter. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it is.
Get that feeling. We then see that Sarah heads into her precinct. It's 2 a.m., and even though it's 2 a.m., the internal affairs officer for the precinct is there, mentions that he'd love to ask her some questions about the glove they found when she has time. Next, we see Sarah enter the evidence room, and then the scene cuts to the penthouse of Kenneth Irons, and he's performing some sort of ceremony. And at the same time he's doing that, Sarah has taken the Witchblade from her precinct and gone to the morgue where Michael Yee's body is. Now, during the ceremony, we see that Kenneth Irons is apparently branding a rune into the hand of his right-hand man, Nottingham, Ian Nottingham. The rune is to be carved into the hand, identical to the one on the sword. For it is written that when the two runes touch, the bearer shall become a conduit for the Witchblade's tremendous energies. So that confused me a little bit. So if his hand has the same rune as that sword he's holding, then he gets to have the power of the Witchblade?
I'm not sure. I was thinking maybe it's an opposite where he can
fight it. So, I mean, couldn't he have put that rune on there before? Or is it only if the Witchblade's active, then and he's got that rune. Yeah, I'm unclear on that.
Yeah, hopefully I'll clear that up a little bit more in the next few issues.
Yeah, so we'll see. So meanwhile, as I said, Sarah's taken the Witchblade. She's gone to the morgue. She's attempting to use the power of the Witchblade to revive Michael Yee. I don't know why she would think that would work. I mean, I don't know if it will work. That's something we don't know. I guess she just feels terrible that she wasn't able to save her partner. She's willing to try anything. The next page is a double page spread of Nottingham saying that he's ready, master. And I have to say that it is one amazing piece of art. I mean, the detail, the pose, the background, everything. Just beautifully done. So much detail by Michael Turner. And then on the next page, we see that Sarah is saying, what am I doing? And she's kind of turned her back to Michael Yee's body. And in the background, we see that Michael has arisen. He's kind of sitting up, and the issue ends. So definitely raised a lot of questions. We got a few answers. Nottingham definitely appears to be one badass dude.
Yeah.
That scene with him leaping over the car. So yeah, I feel like the first issue was okay, but it's really shifted into high gear. Maybe not necessarily quite as much action. Doesn't seem like it covers quite as much time as the first issue. It's a little more compressed, but it definitely advanced the story.
Yeah, but it raised a couple of questions for me. Just, you know, when they find her, when they're at the hospital with her, they're really cool about, you know, the whole situation that they just probably walked into. I mean, it's a whole abandoned, in quotations, theater, and, you know, they find her. Everybody else is dead, and yet, you know, they're really cool about it in the hospital. And then just from, you know, a couple of hours later, she's able to just walk out of there, you know, go home, then go back to work, and it seems like nothing's wrong.
Well, she goes back to work. It's 2 a.m. in the morning. Hardly anybody's there. I'm sure they didn't want her to leave the hospital.
But I mean, it just.
But yeah, it does seem like they'd be a little more concerned. Like, what were you doing there? Why were all these dead bodies? How come you're the only one that survived?
I mean, given...
The only one they know survived. I mean, Nottingham and Iron survived, but they don't know that because by the time the police got there, they were all gone.
Yeah, but I mean, given the detail they gave to that whole sting operation that she ran by herself and her partner, I would have thought that they would have given this a little bit more.
Well, I kind of take that to be, okay, she almost died. You know, because she was shot before she had the Witchblade attached to her.
True.
She was shot. She was hurt. So I kind of have a feeling that those questions may have been coming, but they were just waiting for her to recover. But, you know, it may just be kind of poetic license. It seems like if this were to happen in today's age with all the, you know, social media and 24-hour news and the way things get scrutiny now, especially after 9/11, then yeah, it would have been all over everywhere and there would have been guards stationed outside her door and all kinds of questions asked and nonstop. Look at all these people. Was it terrorists? Blah, blah, blah. But again, you got to remember this was...
Yeah, you're right. It was a different 90s.
It was a different time. You know, it's 20 years ago. So, I mean, granted, it probably is taking a little bit of leeway. She may not have been able to, you know, walk out of that hospital room, you know, quite so easily. But yeah, I just kind of took it to be maybe those questions were coming. They just wanted her to, you know, have a chance to recover first. And as I said, not that much time has gone by. I mean, this is barely the next day. I'm sure that, like I said, those questions would have been forthcoming.
Yeah, that's true. So what was better for you? Nottingham catching the bullet or Nottingham cutting the car and the guy in half?
You know, I don't know that I could choose between the two because technically the thing that would be harder to do would be to catch the bullet.
You know?
I mean, not necessarily that there's somebody in the world strong enough to hold a sword, and the sword would have to be made out of something ridiculously strong to be able to cut through the windshield and roof of a car and a guy's head. But not only that, the guy's got to be strong enough to hold it there, keep it straight up and down to be able to make that cut.
Yeah.
All that being said, if you had the sword and a relatively strong guy, it's not a big leap, no pun intended, to have a guy jump over a car. I mean, we see YouTube videos with guys jumping over cars all the time.
Yeah,
but
true.
To see a guy catch a—I mean, not only he's got the reflexes to catch the bullet, he catches the bullet. The bullet doesn't go through his hand. Full-on Superman catches a bullet.
Yeah, and the panels are laid out really nicely. Where like it was almost real time. Well, as I saw it, I was like, "Whoa, he caught a bullet!" But yeah, I think you're right. I'm gonna go with that one as well.
That's the more impressive. Visually, though, you know, it's a smaller panel where he's catching the bullet. And obviously the, you know, leaping over the car and slicing the guy in half is a giant full page spread that looks badass. I mean, how awesome would it be to have that original art hanging on your wall?
Oh, no, definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely. That would be a good one.
Visually, that looks way cool, but more impressive, I think, would be Catching the Bullet. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more impressive stuff from Nottingham going forward.
Oh, I really hope so, because in my opinion, that's the highlight of this issue, just a little bit more on Nottingham.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so far through the first two issues, he's my favorite character. It's not Sarah and the Witchblade.
No, easily.
I want to know more about Nottingham.
Oh, yeah, easily.
So, all right, well, we hope you all enjoyed hearing us talk about issue 2 of Witchblade, and come back next time where we'll be talking about issue 3.
And you can find issue 3 in volume 1 of the Witchblade trade paperback. Best place to go and get that is instocktrades.com. I believe it's like between $7 and $8 plus shipping. Or you could go to Comixology, pick up the issues that way so you can follow along with us. I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can like us on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Follow us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/TheComicSource. You can drop us an email. The address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. And of course, our website, thecomicsourceblog.com.